I know you've given away bows. I know you've recorded on two awesome violins with your last Bach CD. You have a new fiddle, right?
I do.
How did this come about? Tell us a little bit about this new gem.
Well, it's one of the most iconic violins ever created, and it's called the Mona Lisa of violins, and I think it's called the Mona Lisa because it's really, truly one of the most heralded, studied instruments in the world, and it is in extraordinary condition, and was made in 1741, and there is nary a crack anywhere on the fiddle, and this great health of the instrument gives it its phenomenal sound. And this violin also belonged to the greatest violinist after Paganini, who was Henri Vieuxtemps, who was a Belgian virtuoso violinist of the 19th century.
These instruments have histories, and how does it feel for you? Because I'm sure they're all, while they're incredibly high quality, they all probably feel a little different to you.
Oh, they're totally different. I mean, every violin is like a human being. You know, they all have their own soul, and that you are able to work with a different palette of colors with each instrument is so incredible and powerful. And that this violin has a reach and a breadth and a heft in the sound that is just, you never have to worry about carrying in a huge hall with this violin. It just has an incredible E string, but also the G string, it sounds like a cello. And it's just amazes me that like the A and D are there to bridge such highs and lows. You know, it has light and dark to the sound in one violin, and that is really extraordinary. I've played a lot of violins in my life, and I've been very, very fortunate to play on really great fiddles most of my life, Strads and Guarneri del Jesus. But when I tucked this violin under my chin, I didn't know that a violin like this could exist.
So how did this come about? Did you get a phone call? Did someone run into you at a concert? Did you get an email? How did this sort of come about?
Well, I mean, this is a very special and unique situation, and a donor purchased this for my lifetime exclusive use, so I really don't have to worry for the rest of my life about, you know, returning a violin to a foundation or such. It's been really, I just had tears of, you know, disbelief and joy when this all occurred. And that the violin is also, you know, sat under a bed for a very discriminating bed, but for under 50 years, you know, it was just phenomenal to know that this kind of quality instrument is now going to be, everyone can hear it. You know, and what's also so phenomenal about this instrument is that, you know, every other violin that really compares to this violin, like Paganini's The Canon, is in a museum in Genoa, and Fritz Kreisler's violin is in the Library of Congress. Jascha Heifetz's violin is being used by the concertmaster of the San Francisco Symphony, but is pretty much, you know, under lock and key in a museum. And so that this sponsor felt it, you know, they were giving me the opportunity to share this violin with the world at large is really quite a tremendous responsibility. Also, just the health of the instrument being so clear and blemish-free since 1741, I will be the last person, you know, to do anything to this instrument. So with all my travels and it's really, I'm doing my best to preserve it for the next generation.
Well, it's incredibly exciting. Are the other fiddles jealous, or do you still, you know, say, oh, I think I'll do scales today on this one, and I'll you know, work on some, you know, there's some passage work here, or, you know, this Mason Bates might, you know, sound cool on this one. How do you choose?
Historically, with all the great masters, it was very commonplace to have a Guarneri and a Strad parked in their cases. And so it's only, I think, because the prices have been so out of touch and out of reach that these antique instruments are, you know, considered like, wow, how can you possibly play on two or three of these great instruments? But just like, you know, I mean, to put it in really crass terms, I mean, it's like a almost trying, you know, a different car. It's like, okay, this car goes from 0 to 60 in 3, and this one goes 0 to 60 in 7 seconds. So, I mean, there's a big difference, and that's with the car. I mean, with the violin, it's the sound is so unique and different to each instrument that, you know, the music a lot of times demands playing like on Molly for Mozart or Beethoven, you know, the Molitor Strat. but right now I have the Royal Spanish on the market. I really hope that I find a great home for that violin.
Yeah.
Somebody who can cherish it.
I know this has to be incredibly inspiring just to, you know, be playing on this sort of thing. Has it changed like, oh, you know, I really want to, you know, record some solo works, or I really want to, you know, has this changed any sort of like projects like, oh man, with this, I really want to, you know, accomplish this? Are there any things on the future you can share with us about inspirations?
Well, I mean, the violin made its Carnegie Hall debut last December 1st, you know, playing Barber without a conductor when I was leading the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. And that was pretty swift foray out into, you know, the public eye. I think that we are planning to record. I can't give away what we're going to actually record, but it's one of the most beloved concertos ever written. And so I thought, you know, with this kind of violin that hasn't been recorded either, this would be just a perfect pairing.
It's so exciting. I know it probably adds even more worry travels. You know, thank goodness there are starting to be some more regulations to allow violins. But I'm sure that, you know, when you are thinking about Europe and whatnot, it just adds to the, you know, schedule and worries.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure this violin would love to go back to Belgium, you know, and see Belgium and Italy. And, you know, to think that Vuitton played this violin and that it was even carried in his funeral on a pillow, and that, you know, he was such a rock star in his day. I mean, the entire country came out to show their respect and pay their respects on the day that he died. I mean, that is just extraordinary. And I think if he could have been buried with the violin, he would have, you know, but he had his incredible pupil, Eugene Izai, not you know, just the great Eugene Izai was by his side and wanted to play this and concertize on this violin as well, but actually couldn't afford it. So there's just many instances like that where to actually have it out in the public eye and to experience the sound is so unique.
Well, they've made a wise choice in selecting you, Anne, for this. And we're incredibly happy you're going to be sharing this around the world and on recordings. And it's awesome stuff.
Well, thank you so much, John.